Good evening, you guys. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. And it's time we start the TechNet, as we've done lots of times over the last 36 years. As you guys know, the main purpose of the TechNet is education. The curious radio amateurs gather at this time, help each other find out how all this wireless equipment works, how to make it work better. I hear tell that the Echolink may not be working right now, but there are various people trying to do something about that, so hopefully that will be brought up pretty soon. The Echolink is broken, the TechNet is broken up into roughly three sections, not necessarily evenly divided, it depends on enthusiasm. Let me drop. The first section is where people sign in with their call letters and their name, and we take them in order to, if they've got a question or a comment for the net. You need that sign in just because you're listening. After 36 years, we believe somebody's listening. That doesn't have to be proven anymore. Now, the second section of the TechNet is by Dr. Roy, AC2GS, who gives us a nice technical talk. Also, he handles the mailbag. And you guys have not been writing as many questions to him by way of the mailbag lately, so consider doing a little bit more of that. And the third section is by Paul, WS2N, who gives us the space report. And tonight he's going to be discussing the two females that are going to be doing a simultaneous spacewalk on the International Space Station, I think in the coming week. Alrighty, do we have anyone to check in? Because they do have a question or comment. Please wait for the beeps, and then give me your call letters and name right now. K2RIW in the TechNet.
El Chirio, the question.
WA2VDH, John, yes, with a follow-up from last week.
Very fine. So far we got Rich and John. Anyone else to check in with a question or a comment for the TechNet? Give me your call letters and name right now, after the beeps. One more call for anyone with any questions or comments for the TechNet. Give me a call letters and name right now. And possibly we're going to have a slightly shorter than normal TechNet tonight. We'll soon see. Rich, N2EO, first guy who signed it. Oh, go ahead with your question, Rich.
Good evening. N2EO. By the way, first of all, VD40, cleaned up that switch 1,000%. I just let go of the BTT button, that's with me. But the button is working fine now. I want to ask you my wheelchair. It's a power wheelchair. I'm wondering, because we've been talking about neodymium magnets. It's got a very powerful motor. You can put furniture or part of it. If you hit the button and run into it, not good. But I want to know, it's got a joystick on the right handle. I'm going to reset. And you can make it go forward, backward, left, right, or any combination thereof. For instance, you can go forward and also go to the left, anything. I want to know, how come it's so powerful? And I originally asked the gentleman to do a re-guide that has a transmission. He said it does not have a transmission. So I'm very curious how they make it go different directions.
Yeah, these modern day neodymium permanent magnet armature type motors where the rotating magnetic field is in the field lining on the outside, and the electronics that fires those field windings can do it at any speed. In other words, it can make the frequency at which it's the magnetic current, the current to make those magnets, it can do it very slow or very fast. So therefore, a modern day brushless DC motor with the right kind of drive electronics requires no transmission. It can produce full torque at very low RPMs and nearly full torque at very high RPM.
Grounded mobile amateur radio drop on the repeater system. Node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
So you could say, Rich, what used to be the transmission, because in the old days, you put 12 volts into the motor, it ran at some very constant speed, or very close to that, and then by using a transmission in first, second, and third gear, you could get various speeds out of it. Nowadays, the motor itself, you can speed up. In the case of an old brushed motor, the only way you could make it run slow is to give it a low voltage. But when you give it a low voltage, it has very little torque. The nice thing about a brushless DC motor is that the amount of current you put into those windings can be full current magnitude, full magnetic magnitude, even though you're cycling in that current very slowly and turning the armature very slowly. So when you move it very slowly, it's almost a stepper motor. So that's a great advantage of brushless DC motors. You don't have an armature to wear out, you don't have brushes to wear out, and everything is all built into the electronics. The electronics is a kind of variable frequency inverter. Very well designed, and they're very popular. My Norelco electric shaver, I think, has a brushless DC motor in it. It must have, because it's been running every single day for 15 solid years. Brushed motor would have worn out a long time ago. That's some of what I know about brushless DC motors, and if you Google those words, brushless DC motor, and you look at the right Wikipedia on that, I think you'll see something about the theory of operation and why they've got full torque across such a very wide speed range. And in your particular case, if you want to limit the amount of force that that motor can create, which maybe can damage furniture, there's ways that you could have a circuit added that limited the current fed to the motor, which would limit the torque it creates when it's pressing up a piece of up against a piece of furniture. N2EO, K2RI.
Repeater, timeout.
You've got it, Rich.
Okay, Zig, N2EO. Well, I tell you, I'm awfully glad I have it. Not everybody qualifies. It costs Medicare a lot of money. I don't know why these things are. I don't know if it's medical equipment and the insurance they have to pay. Would you believe it was about $5,000, I'm told?
Yes, I would. And it's got some pretty fancy electronics. It's got all kinds of safety features it has to follow, because that wheelchair, if it wasn't well designed, there's a zillion ways it could get you, a person with no feet, it could get you into all kinds of trouble. So it doesn't surprise me it's that expensive. And as long as you treat the battery correctly, I think you're going to get a lot of reliability out of that machine there, Rich. So go ahead.
Yes, well, I have gotten a lot of reliability. Twice I had a flat tire, and they did a good job. So it's called, the company is called HoverRound. HoverRound. They're on TV with the advertisements. Anybody who's listening who needs one, I'd recommend it. This brand.
Sounds like you're pretty happy with it. Okay, we're going to go on to the next person, who was John, WA2, Victor David Hotel. You've got it, John, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, fine business, Vic, WA2VDH, attorney. Yeah, fine business. Question last week had to do with the number of lines in the 720 P&I and 1080 P&I, the total number of lines. What I did was a little bit of research. I put my scope on the YPRPB or component video out of my cable box. Actually, I put it on the Y output. That component output is an analog high definition output. Just let me drop it. And I was able to see that there is a regular retrace interval and a blanking interval, along with the serrations, you know, for the various pulses during that retrace window. I wasn't able to count the lines, but I then did some more research on the net, and I found out that 720 PNI, both of the total, the total number of lines for that is 750 lines, and for the 1080 PNI, the total number of lines is 1125. So they do have the ability to convert it into an analog video signal. I don't think a lot of the newer TVs have used the component video input, because they want everybody to go to HDMI, because that has a built-in copy protection. And they're very frightened of people having access to a high-def analog signal. But it's very interesting that the that you can get a regular analog video output on that. Back to you, Dick.
Somebody wants to...
Yes, hey, too, Jay. Can you hear me, Dick?
Yeah, we're hearing you, Eric. And you may have heard that Echolink, some people think, is down, and maybe you've got a chance to look at it. But when it comes to video, you're the man. Go right ahead, Eric.
Yeah, the analog component output is 1125. Actually, originally it was 1135. And 720p is actually 706. Number one. They want you to be... they want you to be HDMI, of course, so that way copy protection works, and that's kind of the set of it. But if you want, you can record HD using the analog.
C2RWKHDMI. I'm going to make a guess, Eric, and you can correct me on this one, that in the old days of a cathode ray tube set, if you had sufficient adaptability of the electronics, that's firing that magnetic field into the yoke that's actually deflecting the beam that gets squirted onto that screen. I'm guessing that some of these other formats, 480, 720, 1090, and so on, were set up so that you had the ability to transmit that data in an analog manner with a normal horizontal retrace and vertical blanking interval and so on. So you had the ability to transmit it into a... analog CRT set, even though a modern display matrix type digital electronics doesn't need all of that. Is that some of how the standards got set, Eric? KE2EJ, K2IW?
That's absolutely correct, Dick. 1125 is interlaced. It's actually two 525 line phases. And 720p is one 720p, or 126 line, I'm sorry, 706 lines in one field.
Sounds good. And with modern day digital television, you have a circuit inside that I'm going to call the display matrix. And so your digital data coming in almost any rate or order or whatever is updating each of those pixels in the display matrix. The display matrix itself is then converted to a signal that goes to the individual pixels of the actual screen that you really look at. As such, the modern day digital set has the ability to update the data in the internal display matrix at any speed, in any order it wants to. And the way that you convert the display matrix into what you really see could again be having any update rate, any method of doing it. It doesn't have to be sequential lines. You've got complete freedom on the way the data is put in and the way the data is taken back out onto the screen. That's a bunch of guesses on my part. KE2EJ, K2RIW in the deck net.
K2RIW, K2EJ. Well, the reality is that television is analog, and the camera is analog. It makes an analog signal to make it, and the display is analog. It makes an analog amount of light. The only thing that isn't analog is when you generate it by computer. So there you go.
But that analog camera, you take that 19 megabits or whatever it is of data, and you do digitize it by various means in order to transmit it over the path between the camera and the private watching television set in my home. There's a lot of digitization that takes place, isn't that true, Eric? And by the way, the chrominance and luminance on most of what I watch over the air broadcast or cable, roughly how many bits of resolution is there in the luminance and chrominance? Over to you, Eric, K2LIW.
Alright, well, luminance can be 10 bits, but it's usually 8 bits. What you call chrominance, which is really not chrominance, it's really RGB, but it's matrixed out. That can be what they call 420, 440, 441, 444. There are various different varieties of the color. So, but the analog, or rather the number of bits for the black and white is either 8 or 10.
Okay. And is there a way I can tell, am I getting 8 or 10 bits of luminance resolution? Those numbers represent the amount of RGB possible states. Over to you, Eric.
Yeah, well, 440 is 4 bits of R minus Y, 4 bits of B minus Y, 0 bits of D minus Y. There's various different states of color resolution. Actually, if you're watching a satellite signal, you're watching 8 bits, and you're watching probably 420. You know, the color is matrixed out, so how many bits you use the matrix is determined by the system. Over the air to this day, it's pretty much it's pretty much 420. There are different standards for different things.
In the case of over-the-air broadcast, make a rough guess, Eric. What percentage of over-the-air broadcast is broadcast with 8 bits of luminance, and what percentage is transmitted with 10 bits of luminance resolution? Over to you.
You know, over-the-air broadcast is pretty much 8 bits. You could be watching 720 with 10 bits, but that's what they call HDR. And you won't actually see that over the air. You'll get that from HD DVD. So just figure it's 8 bits for the most part.
You did hear that there's been a statement made that Echolink was not working tonight. You did get that message, Eric. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I don't have the facilities to fix it. I don't have a computer. Although I did fix IRLP, that was working.
Okay, hear you. So, can Rich or KNB possibly restore Echolink if it happens to be down? Over to you.
I suppose, but I don't know if he knows how.
And how about Andy, CDL? So, Andy and Rich, some one of those have to be able to do what Eric usually does.
I don't think Andy can do it either.
Okay, I heard somebody saying something, but he's talking first and then pressing the button, so we're just hearing the last syllable. So please press the button, wait a second, and then tell us your message. Go right ahead, whoever it is.
Hey, it's Tom Tuxian. Question. In film, digital film, you have 10 bits 422, and it's twice as much of resolution as 8 bits 422. How is it in TV? And Tuxian.
Okay. If you understood that question, go right ahead, Eric.
Yeah, he's talking about recording standards. There are different types of recording standards. There's QuickTime. There's a bunch of different kinds. They cover various systems. There's 422, 444. The movie people use 444 in any movie. That's 4 bits of luminance. 444 is 4 bits of R minus Y, 4 bits of B minus Y, 4 bits of B minus Y, different colors.
we take an analog, we bring it by a cube, using only two components. You link it to have three components. Plus, you already have the roll, draft rate, and make it that all three components.
Eric, I think you're holding the handy-talkie in a different way than you were on the earlier transmissions. The earlier transmissions, you were sounding good. On that last transmission, you were 80% noise, so go back to the first position on the handy-talkie and please repeat that message. Over to you, Eric.
Can you hear me now?
Beautiful. That's the spot. put a mark on the floor. Keep going back to that spot.
All right, in the film world, they use 888 if they're really going to be raw. But there's 444, there's 422, there's 421, there's 420. Those are the number of bits of color and how they're matrixed out. There's something called QuickTime, which is, can be 422, can be 420. There's another, there's a whole bunch of different standards which they can digitize. And basically, you're talking about recording format.
VDH with one quick question.
You got it, John.
Now that Eric is here, I just wanted to ask one other thing about the relationship between 720, 480, and 1080. I noticed that the relationship of 720 to 480 is 1.5, and 1080 to 720 is also 1.5. Is that related to the 3-to-2 pull down that they do to convert between these different standards? Go ahead.
Yeah, the answer to that is negative. If you have 480, 480 is the same as NTSC. It's 525 lines, two fields. Each field is 262.5 lines. 720p is 720 lines per field, per frame, rather. So there's no splitting of the frames. So during a 60th of a second, you get 720 lines. 1080 IM is interlaced. That's 525 times 2, each one being a 60th of a second. 1180p is 1180 lines per 60th of a second, so you get the idea.
Yeah, but I've noticed that the cable boxes are able to convert from an incoming, say, at 1080. They are able to, if you call it up, convert it to 720. How are they able to convert one format quickly to another? Okay.
Yeah, it's actually pretty easy. You do it with a frame buffer. You write something in at 1120, you write it out at 720. There's a delay factor in there. When you see standard conversion, you might be 4 or 6 or 8 frames late in terms of what comes out as opposed to what's going in. It's all calculus, really. It's discrete cosine transform. You're doing a whole bunch of math. And it's basically done with DSP.
Oh, I see. Okay. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it.
Hey, you're moving the handy turkey back into the noisy position slowly, Eric, so be a little bit careful on that. Okay. Anybody have any further questions on the subject right now? Happens to be digital television formats. Anybody any further questions? Give me a call letters right now. K2RIW in the tech man. Go ahead, Wes.
Camera, Reto, any other camera, recorded at 422, 4K, 30 frames per second, or 24 frames per second in European standard. And that's in 465. Now it's going to the TV studio, and it has to be transmitted to the air. How you reach the high quality of picture on the TV that is similar to the recorded one. And to explain.
And very similar to what I think Wes is asking. In the case of 422, 4 bits, I think, has only got the 16 possible states, which seems to me very coarse on the RGB. Does that do those bits get dithered from adjacent pixel to adjacent pixel so that you don't see artifacts of that very small number of bits of RGB encoding? Over to you, Eric, and be careful where you hold your handy. KE2EJ, KE2RIW.
Actually, you don't need all the color bits. If you remember in NTSC, I is 0.25 megahertz, U is 0.75 or 1.5 megahertz, depending upon the colorimetry that you're looking for. So, actually, 422 is a very high quality color, and it means every fourth frame, we send two frames of red, red, and green, blue. We send two frames of RGB. Two frames, or really actually two frames of R minus Y and two frames of C minus Y. So, it really has a lot to do with your perception in terms of what the eyeball sees.
I do think I remember that the human eye has very little resolution of red amplitude. So therefore you don't need a whole lot of bits of red in order to still not see any artifacts and still get pretty good color reproduction. I think the human eye is least sensitive to red amplitude. Is that true, Eric?
11% blue, 28%, or I forget what it is, red, and it's 55%. So green is the most sensitive to the eye. Blue is the least.
That makes sense, because green is right in the middle of the 400 to 700 millimicrons, as we used to call it, nanometers of wavelength that the eye can see. And those red laser pointers, some of the early ones ran at 480. I think the more modern ones are running 460. And it's a very steep slope of human eye sensitivity versus wavelength of red light. So the slightly higher frequency, slightly shorter wavelength laser pointers look a hell of a lot brighter, even though the same number of milliwatts might be present. Any further questions, John? The V2VDH, Mr. Video. Isn't that what VDH stands for? Video discussed. Video discussed here. K2RIW. Go ahead, John.
Okay, fine business, Vic. No, actually, it's very dignified, Ham. But anyway, yeah, I appreciate it. As I said, I've been doing a little scoping of the outputs of my cable box. I noticed something interesting, too, that whenever I plug in the HDMI output, it disables the other, the component video output. I think that's part of that high-definition content protection to prevent any recording stuff. Anyway, I appreciate the time and the answers. Thanks.
VXM.
Go ahead, one more question.
VXM, who is that?
Whiskey 2 Bravo Zulu, Rich.
Go right ahead, Rich.
B2GXM, Rich.
It's maybe more a question for Eric, but, you know, I was a cameraman, a professional cameraman, worked in TV studios, spent thousands of hours in TV studios looking at pristine video. The stuff that I see now, at we're seeing already.
If I understand you correctly, when you look at 2K these days, it's hard to believe that 4K would really be a recognizable difference. Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is I can't see what's beyond 4K that would matter.
Yeah, we're going to eventually go back to Eric for a prediction on that one.
And I have a question.
And we're going to... we got two Riches and Wes in that order. The other Rich, go ahead.
K2RW in the group, WB2GXM, Rich. Dick, I hear a background on your signal, John's signal, and Wes's signal. Either you are all three listening to the same TV show in the background, or something weird is going on, WB2GXM.
I'm hearing that same audio in the background when you're talking here, Rich. So, I'm pretty sure it's taking place at Glen Oaks. Let's see if Eric's got a comment on that. KE2EJ, are you hearing the broadcast in the background of each of our voices? K2RIW. Okay, we'll go over to West. And 2XJN, go right ahead, West.
Two things. First, in case of the camera for the film industry, I can provide some answers. But a question to Eric. You have H.264, which would be the codec for the compression format. And then you have H.265, which is twice as much in the quality. And would then that clip that is in 264 or 265, when it's delivered to you and you have to transmit it over the radio, over the air, would that differ in quality? And to Adrian.
Eric, were you able to understand that question? KE2EJ, KE2RIW, and hold the heady talkie in the right place. I think Eric's not available. I'm not sure we've got an answer to your question, Wes. Let's see if anyone else has an answer to Wes's question. Give me your call letters and name right now.
Fernandez.
Okay, I heard somebody... I heard somebody trying to sign in, but we only heard the last syllable of what you were saying.
All right, do you hear me now, Dick?
Now we're hearing you very well, Eric. Go right ahead.
H.264 is a previous 4K standard. H.265 is a newer 4K standard, which has a higher resolution and better imaging.
Is that what you were looking for, Wes?
No, that recording between 264 and 265 be somehow visible, the difference when you see it on the TV.
Nice. H.264 takes higher quality. It produces the same nice signal as H.265. So, technology marches on.
I want to understand that the number of bits would be higher for H.265, and then if I see it on TV, convert it to the signal by the receiver, TV receiver, the signal would be better quality.
Yeah, it takes more bits to do H.265. The bit rate is actually, if you do bit per bit between 264 and 265, they're actually a lower bit rate on 265 for the same quality, but you can get higher quality at a 265 at the higher bit rate.
Thank you very much for that. Now, responding to 4K, I have 5.7K EVA1 from Panasonic. And you can downsize it to 4K, and it's much better than the original 4K from any other camera. That's because there is more pixel, and they are kind of shrinked. And to Asia.
I'm out of battery power, but it's actually not more pixels, it's just more resolution.
Am I hearing that there really is, beyond 4K, there's a 5.7K receiver you can buy these days?
Another K. It's a camera. It's called EVA1. It's 5.7K. That's by Panasonic. And you have a number of formats over here that you can convert it to. And the advantage is that it uses, let me drop. It uses 5.7K. to be downsized, shrink to 4K, but in the area you have more pixels per square area because that 5.7K is shrinking. Electronic stabilization, the difference between 4K and 5.7K is approximately one-third. So the one-third bigger is 5.7 than 4K. Now, this difference could be used for electronic stabilization. You have a perfect lossless picture in 4K and 2K.
Wes, that 5.7K camera that you're discussing, how expensive and how big is it?
It's a hit. It was a hit of 2017, end of 2017, and it was available in 2018. I bought it for $1,735. Now they dropped the price to $6,400 and change. Because Panasonic for the long period of time wasn't good in the film cameras, and now with that boom, they don't want to stop it. They just don't want to have it flow. I mean, it's amazing. So, really something. Let me drop it.
And I presume that camera also has a digital zoom as well as optical zoom?
It's tricky because this is film camera. So the film camera doesn't have really zoom. It's not to making documentaries. It's a film camera. So you do not have a zoom. You can zoom it manually, or you can have the mechanical zoom. Now, focus is one push focus. You don't have a constant focus. This is not C200 or C300 from Canon. And there is it's a high quality camera, but there is something that is absolutely heat, and there is a Blackmagic pocket cinema camera. Let me drop it. BM Blackmagic pocket cinema camera 4K. That's how it's being called. That is by Blackmagic, the Australian company that actually made so many of American companies suffering right now. They have a software and they have a camera. So this camera costs $1,299. It's a film camera. It doesn't have a stabilization. It doesn't have many features. We are putting it from the production line and still is on pre-order, because any piece that is showing up is being sold as we speak. So for those who wants to have really good stuff, that's the solution. Dick, enter it here.
Bravo Zulu.
Go right ahead, Rich.
My question, probably because it was ill-formed, that it wouldn't be the first time, sort of got lost in the mud. I'm not talking about the number, the algorithm, or, you know, what's coming next in that sense. What I'm talking about is who needs more than what is right here now. I can't imagine it, and I have a very trained eye. Go ahead.
Okay. It's a good question. Actually, all of the manufacturers are heading to 8K. So from one hand, you cannot find a difference between 4K and 5.7K if you look at the picture. With the good light and good ISO, so all of the conditions, you cannot find the difference. But already there is a number of companies, they went to 8K, and there is another trend that is taking place right now. Instead of just increasing the resolution, they're increasing the size. So you had the Super 35, which was the latest standard. Now you have a full frame. So for the full frame, not only you have a huge camera. My camera is less than 1 kilogram. It's 2 pounds, less than 2 pounds. That's EVA1, if I remember correctly. It's very light. Let me drop. But they have Terra, they have Red, they have... gosh, forget it. But anyhow, Alexa, they have Alexa. All of those cameras, they are enormously expensive stuff. And they don't have anything that you would be pleased with. You have to add additional stuff to it. And they're going to 8K and full frame. So full frame right now is by Panavision. Eric should know about it, Panavision. So that's 8K. And there is... Panasonic have made Vericam, and Vericam is to be releasing full frame as well. There is another company that went with full frame, but I don't remember that. Eric would know more. Enter again.
My question doesn't have to do with signal acquisition, as in cameras. My question is a simple question. I know there are roll-up panels coming, fold-up panels, bigger panels. I know all that. But when I go into PC Richards, on some of those panels, I see as good a video, if not better, than I've ever seen in a studio. So I just don't, I can't for the life of me understand what is coming next that will cause a, you know, run on inventory, if you will. Go ahead.
Rich, let me ask you a question. You've been around long enough, I think. Back in the days of film cameras, the state of the art in my mind in those days for consumer-owned products was a Kodachrome 2 slide properly displayed on a good screen. When it comes to the resolution you could get out of a Kodachrome 2 transparency, how well do the modern-day cameras come up to that standard? I wonder if you got a guess on that one, Rich. Back to you, Rich, K2LIW.
It's an apples to oranges question. They have a totally different look, as does, you know, shooting movies or TV shows on, you know, digital and then going back to film on them. You can't compare the two. They're two different beasts. Some people, some directors will never, ever shoot digital, and some don't care, and it's getting close where you can't tell the difference. So it's not that, and that gets a little complicated. I'm talking about the $600, the $700 thing hanging on your wall. Who would want for more? Or I can't imagine what I can see other than holographic that would cause me to say, oh, yeah, there's another revolution coming. And I'm sure there are people like Eric and others, you know, on the TechNet who know better than I what that could be. I can't see it, though. W2BZ.
You don't give the answer to the question. Holographic, right? So it's something new. People are looking for something new. They buy the toy, they play with the toy. The other manufacturers put next year something that is exactly like that or better and costs less. So now they're looking for something more. That's why we have 8K. That's why we have more and more and more. Even though that you don't need it. And to issue.
VDH with a comment. Before we go to John, Rich, let me go back to you. When it comes to three-dimensional display techniques, and I think Eric has owned a three-dimensional television in his house, have you seen many of those? Are they worth it, or is it more of a gimmick? So that's another thing that can be added to this, which I guess is close to what you're referring to when you say holographic, but three-dimensional displays. Have you seen any of those that you think are worth it? Back to you on that one, Rich.
Only no, but I have a cousin who invested heavily, he had the money to invest heavily, in a company called 3D-ality, one of the worst names for a company or anything else I ever heard in my life. And he said, you know, 8K 3D is something to behold. But as we all know, the consumer electronic business was betting pretty heavily on 3D, and that fell flat on its face. And again, I bring back the PC Records. When I see maybe two or three of the panels and what they're showing at literal local Long Island PC Richards, I just can't see wanting or being in want of anything else. Maybe it's 8K 3D. He said it was gorgeous, but who knows? I don't know why, if it was so gorgeous, why the whole 3D movement was very short-lived.
I think you're being fooled, though, Rich. I believe those beautiful displays you're seeing at PC Richard are really a digital playback of a disc. That's not a cable, satellite, or over-the-air broadcast. See, you're seeing something that's better than you're really going to see on the average day in your home. That's a guess on my part. I back you on that one, Rich.
That I know, and also I was in the retail when I moved out to LA 100 years ago. I was in the retail TV, camera, and hi-fi business, as it was known by then. And there are so many tricks that they still use to fool consumers, especially with audio, you know, into a system sounding better, you know, than it can. But I just don't know, and I haven't seen anything beyond where it is right now. I just get blown away every time I see pristine video, you know, out of PC Riches. And yes, they are playing to their advantage in what they're feeding those panels with. I know that. So, but that's not part of my question, because I'm not talking about what could the broadcasters do to make everything better, even though I don't think they have to either. I'm talking about why would a consumer who goes out now and buys a Samsung, top of line, any one of them, have to, you know, would be compelled to buy another one ever, or within 10 years or 15 years. Because when I stood in the studio and I knew that engineers were tweaking that picture in real time, you know, I know what I'm looking at, and I'm looking at gorgeous stuff that my eye can't see getting any better.
Sounds awful good. Wow. Well, as I pass it over to John, PDH, drag your feet a little bit in case anybody has anything to contribute to Rich's question. VDH to take it with some delay. K2RIW in the TechNet.
I think I understand what Rich is talking about. I mean, as the definition gets higher and higher for a reasonable size TV that you're going to have in your house, you're not really going to notice it that much. It boils down to what I call the last inch between the cornea of your eye and the retina of your eye. That's where it really boils down to, the last inch or so. But, I mean, for any reasonable-sized TV, it's not going to, you're not going to see a lot of difference if they go greater than 1080. However, if we're talking about a large TV that may be on an outside display or at a stadium or something, if they went to 4K or 8K for that size, I think you would notice the difference. Go ahead.
I could well understand, you know, for the guys in that business, the outdoor projection business, I have a friend in one of them, those roll-up displays that are coming, you know, they're just going to be beautiful, and those guys are going to make a lot of money showing stuff on lawns, you know, in the summertime. But I wonder, Eric, do you have any knowledge of anything that could make, and again, I'm talking about a very, very, very good panel and fed with the best video. Do you know if anything that would compel you or anybody else to run out in 3, 5, 8, 10 years to buy something quote-unquote better? Because you also have a very studied eye, W2BZ.
To that, I'm... Is Sony or Panasonic coming out with anything that we're going to see in the near future? Go ahead, Wes.
In 2016, I started to hunt for the good camera. I said to myself that I'm in the age that I would like to have some fun. And I went through all of the available cameras, all of the specs, all of the things, and it's pretty amazing. I mean, this field is really something. At first you listen to it and you understand nothing, and then you start to understand and you start to see the beauty of it, let me go. So, traditionally, Canon was the one that was leading in professional film camera market. And Canon was also making the cameras for the documentaries, for the TV. So those are the cameras. They have a zoom, they have all of the features that are for quick catching the right moment. Movie cameras, those film cameras, they don't have anything. When I bought the EVA-1, I had no lenses, no nothing, just the body. And that was quite expensive. So then after you buy everything, you add another $4,000 to it. But the good thing is that we, as a customer, we want to have everything for less or for free if it's possible. But this is a different world. Nobody gives you anything for free. So we want the best for the less. And Panasonic had a problem. They didn't succeed for a long period of time, and then a few years ago, they were able to put Vericam, and then Vericam LT, which was the camera that was over $10,000, was $17,000, $18,000. And this was really something. Comparing to other cameras in range of $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, and $100,000, which was Alexa and Red, that was the best. So, they started to sell it, and it was the only camera that was sold by Panasonic in this field. And they listened to everybody, they collect the information, and they put new product on the market, which was EVA-1, and it was a hit. It was a hit. Everybody won it. It was the cheapest camera from the most expensive camera, but it was a hit. Till a year ago, Blackmagic decided that they want to put Blackmagic Pocket Cinema camera, which is nothing. It's $1,298, $99, whatever. And now everybody is switching to that. So Panasonic is becoming great again. And to X-ray.
Panasonic's becoming great again.
K-E-2-E-J.
Okay. Eric is up. We're going to turn it over to Eric. K-E-2-E-J. K-2-R-I-W. Go ahead, Eric.
K-2-R-I-W. K-2-J. I just got Echo on for me. I forgot I had my phone. Oh, well. Three guys can use Echo Link now. Blackmagic is an Australian company that really does a neat job of making really good video stuff. And they also make a really nice telecine that each costs a couple $100,000, now they've got it down to about 24. So, anyway, you guys carry on. Carry through that.
Yeah, in signal to noise ratio now, you sound good with the cell phone, but you got to make sure that your mouth is very close to that that microphone, because that particular microphone on your headset, Eric, seems to have no frequency response beyond 900 hertz or 1 KC. So all the high frequency notes are missing. And so I wish there was a way around that one. Top of the line consumer television set for the home, I think, was $3,000 or $4,000 a few years ago. If I was buying a 50 or 60 inch screen, high quality set today, do I still have to pay that kind of money? I haven't done any checking on that lately. You guys know. K2RIW listening.
$600, $550.
$600 for a, what was that again?
$600 for 52 inches.
And I think you're saying that's pretty high quality. That sounds good.
Okay. So for 4K, you can get the best price, $550, $600 for 52 inches.
And there's still some other goodies. You've got to add a sound. I'm pretty sure you have to add a sound bar to that. And I presume it comes with all the right electronics that it can take over the air television of almost any format. Is that true?
K-E-2-E-J.
You know, 4K sets are pretty cheap too. 8K sets are actually going to come out this summer. It's kind of silly to buy it. You could put a 1080 set next to a 4K set and move back about 20 feet, and you can barely tell the difference. So, you know, it's whether you want to spend money or not. You can buy a 110-inch 4K set for, you know, $4,000 or $5,000, $6,000, which is, like, kind of stupid, but they all have audio outputs, they have, laser, you know, AC3 outputs that you can plug into your stereo, so you don't need a sound bar, but you can, if you're nuts.
When it comes to the display itself, Eric, what is the display, what method of display gives us good black background, resolution, brightness ratio, and whatever? If you're choosing the kind of display, which one is your favorite, Eric?
Well, HDR, which is high dynamic resolution. HDR, which is called gamut resolution, and OLED, which means each pixel is an LED that lights up. So that's the peak of performance. Actually, LED monitors for studios are pretty expensive, around $3,000 to $4,000, but you can get them for the consumer a lot cheaper. KQRWKTDI.
So if I understand you correctly, you like OLED. What brand name has a good OLED display, Eric? Go ahead. And roughly how many bucks?
Are we talking consumer or are we talking professional? Professional is usually around, that's the one they started to do, around $12,000, $13,000. Good professional now is around $6,000 to $7,000. Home OLEDs are still in the $2,000 to $3,000 range, made by Sony, they're made by Samsung, they're made by a few others. But that's OLED with the HDR, so the prices keep coming down.
WS2N.
Call recognized. Does OLED have any kind of an aging characteristic? If I was foolish enough to put a particular picture on that screen for a lot of time, does it get burned in? I mean, 5 years from now, will an OLED look equally as clean to me? Eric, go ahead.
Please comment on that.
It's getting better, Dick. It does burn. The new ones are getting better at it. If you're foolish enough to put something on there that's a bug forever, then, you pay for it. But, they do have a lifetime, just like gas discharge devices did, just like some LCDs do. But it's getting much better than it ever was.
Oh, thank you. Okay, Paul first, and then another person with some further data. Paul, WS2N, go right ahead.
Yeah, I think the OLED is definitely the best from what I've seen so far. We have a Target out by me, and they have one on display. And naturally, it's with all the other TVs, and this one just blows the other ones away. It's about a 60-inch, and the blacks come out really good because you really don't have a backlight of any kind, so you have darker blacks, and they happen to be running a space shot, that's what they have. It keeps going around and around, so it's an in-house transmission, and very, very well done. You're not going to beat the OLEDs right now, but unfortunately, it's like Eric said, it's around $2,500.
And I presume that's for something like a 60-inch screen, Paul?
Yeah, QSL, that's about what it was, 60-inch screen.
If you bought a 40-inch OLED, are they a lot cheaper or just a little bit cheaper?
I haven't seen one. I'd have to look up online or something, but I haven't seen one in person. The only one that they had there was that size.
Okay, thank you. Who is it that said he got some further information on that subject?
I think it's Rich Whiskey 2 Bravo Zulu again. Funny you ask that, because I'm looking at on ratings.com, it's a contraction of ratings, RTINGS.com. These guys are amazing. And they just came out with, a study, a one-year update on the OLED burn-in test. It's fascinating reading if you're, not in the market at all for a TV. It's just fascinating because, it's whether they put it on CNN for a year or they put it on Fox Sports for a year, which moves a lot, of course. It's just fascinating. And so is the rest of their stuff. I mean, I would never anymore go out and buy a turntable, headphones, or a flat panel TV without first reading the reviews on ratings.com.
That's very good information. I thank you on that, Rich. Go ahead, Eric. Wes.
Yeah, OLED, OLED is seen as, there's another one, QLED. as the highest quality, the best display. Problem with all of this is that it doesn't have enough brightness, so you have a 5